Welcome to AM Best Audio.
Since its establishment in 1822 by Captain Richard Wiley as the North River Insurance Company, Crum & Forster has cultivated a legacy of innovation, resilience, and corporate responsibility. What began as a business insuring buildings in New York City has evolved into a prominent force in the insurance industry, offering a diverse array of risk solutions and forging enduring partnerships. In his book, The Once and Future CNF, Crum & Forster CEO Mark Ady takes readers on an engaging journey through the company's history, spanning more than two centuries of growth and leadership. I'm Lori Chortis for AM Best TV, and Mark Ady joins us now to discuss his new book. Mark, welcome. So great to see you again. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be here right now. Thanks for having me.
So Mark, can you tell us about your book and how the idea for it came about?
So we turned 200 years old in 2022. And, that got me thinking about, how did we last 200 years? And are there lessons there that, that we should kind of partake in? And so that got me into some researching. And around that time, Prem Watsa, Fairfax's CEO, said, it'd be really cool to have a book about the 200 years. And I was like, yeah, it would be pretty cool. And then as I was researching it, I was kind of in all these different rabbit holes of kind of things that were just interesting to me. And then Prem saw my research materials behind me on Zoom. And he's like, am I going to have to wait like another 100 or 200 years for this book? And so I got down to writing it. And it's really fascinating, right? Some of these people who were really just pictures on the wall, Captain Wiley, who you mentioned, we've got his picture. And you look at him and he looks a little stiff and severe. And then when you start doing research on these people, they're really fascinating. Like Captain Wiley turns out to be an endlessly, fascinating character. And then kind of the more I looked at it, the more you realize Crum was really very representative of kind of all the companies over that span, right? And so it really ends up being the story of Crum & Forster as a representative example of really the industry. And then we look at Crum and some of the stuff they went through. I started to think about, how bad was the industry, say in the early 1980s. And so one of my things that I would go around and do with people was I would ask them how bad do they think the combined ratio got for the periods between 1965 and 1985, so 20 years. And most people come up 100 or 98 or 102, and I'm like, it was 200. And so one of the kind of framing thoughts in the book is really that those years were really, really, really bad from an underwriting perspective. And then it took a really long time to figure out, how bad that was. And then it took about the same amount of time for everybody to forget, how bad it was, right? And so as I asked people, there were a couple of people who nailed it. But really then I said, this book would be good to write for the next generation of insurance leaders to think about, hey, some of these things back in the old days didn't work out so hot. I can read about them and maybe avoid, a replay of that in the future. And so then I was like, I've read a lot of insurance history books. Some of them are a little dry, right? And so I was like, I want to make it readable and kind of funny and accessible, even though it's a serious topic. And so that takes a little more work, and so this handsome volume we have here is the result of that.
Wonderful, wonderful. How did Crum & Forster's early years as a New York fire insurance company set the foundation for its later success in the broader property and casualty market?
Yeah, well, that, what's interesting is, you know, Captain Wiley, right, back in that kind of prehistory of insurance, somehow managed to come up with a lot of the things that ended up being through lines over the decades, right? And so, you know, he had a very disciplined approach. You know, Crum survived some of the big fires in New York when a lot of other people didn't, because Captain Wiley had a very conservative approach. They stuck to their knitting, so they were very specialized. They had something that they felt they were good at, and they stuck with it. And then he was like a long-term thinker. The way he structured the company had more of a long-term feel than some of the other companies around at the time. And they had really a feel for long-term employees, right? So his protege, you know, who he hires when he's like 15, ends up 63 years with the company. And so a lot of, you know, kind of long-term thinking, a lot of discipline. And somehow he came about that somewhat instinctively, right? I don't think there was a place to go to learn that. And so a lot of those ended up being through lines into the modern era. And so, you know, kind of picking up on those is was another interesting part of writing the book.
Which pivotal leaders in the company's history played a crucial role in shaping its strategic direction? And how did their decisions influence the company's growth and reputation?
Yeah, so they're really different eras. So right, each of the chapters, and I did kind of focus on the leader of the company at that point in time, or the kind of guiding spirit, right? And so clearly you had Captain Wiley, and then you know, his protege, and they carried it through that first, you know, tough period, and came through a couple conflagrations and got it to a certain point. And then it kind of got into some interesting territory, but there was a family, the Hutchins family, that was associated with the company for 140 years, mainly on the board, but they helped with a lot of the financing. And then, you know, Crum and Forster come along, and again, you see these pictures of two, you know, very serious looking guys, and there was a lot less information on them than there was on Captain Wiley, because Captain Wiley had been in the military, and that has more people that follow it than insurance. So finding information on Crum and Forster was trickier, but you kind of, okay, how, put yourself in their shoes. Like, why did they form this? What were they doing? And what they did was very interesting, right? They formed a company to manage insurance companies. And, you know, that's a model that was a thing back then. It's coming back in popularity. But so they were super interesting. And then they find a guy who is another teenager named Lester Parsons, who, again, stays 50 years and really carries it. He had kind of a dream team that stayed together for 50 years. And you think about that, you're like, if you worked with this group for 50 years, and you can do a lot, right? So I think the reputation of Crum and Forster, you know, kind of grew. And then Lester picks his son-in-law to run the company next. And he and a guy named Bobby Russell take it through the go-go period, which again, as you'll find out in the book, a lot of the trouble started in, you know, the day they wrote their first multi-line policy, right? So you go from being this, you know, really property focused company, which was the way the regulators had it set up back then. Now you're writing this multi-line. Mistakes were made, and I think that's an industry, you know, kind of a common denominator. But the package policies were very, very popular. But then here we get into, you know, if you think about the market cycles and what a leader has to do in terms of looking at inflection points. You know, the early 70s were really a tough market for insurance, right? And so you see companies, and say, for example, I did some digging and found Chubb's annual report from the early 70s or 74, I think it was. And they're like, ah, like hit the brakes. Like, we got to stop doing this or redo this. Whereas the Crumb guys are like, woohoo, you know, they just kept going. And so you look at how different people surfed those different markets and how that those decisions at those kind of crucial inflection points could make a huge difference to your next decade or two of, so if you, you know, grew into a soft market, you know, you're probably in the cleanup territory for the next two decades. If you, you know, had to sit out, you know, hard market, you know, you're on the sidelines for a decade or so. And so those crucial moments, and it really is, you know, one of my other big themes has to do with kind of unknowability, right? Like that there are things that in this business that you just can't know. So the things that you do know, you got to do right. And so some of the issues in the 70s and 60s and 80s, you know, were probably unknowable, but some of them you could probably see coming, and some companies pulled back when others went hard. So in that sense, you know, Bobby Russell is kind of a controversial character because he takes them through this rough period. He sells to Xerox, and for a big price, and so kind of ends up, you know, it's like a good way to end. But then there's a whole lesson there, right? Which is the Xerox guy is we're buying it under some really weird, you know, assumptions. And I think that's one of the other kind of big things in the book is like this business, it's great business, but it's a tough business. And it really relies on you kind of understanding and appreciating the business, which again, reading this book, I think it'll catch you up on a couple hundred years of that. But you know, if you get into this business for kind of a short-term, you know, benefit or a quick hit, and you can barely spell the word insurance, the next word you're going to learn how to spell is probably loss development, right? And so it's a tough business, but it's super interesting. So Xerox brings in, you know, once they kind of decide they don't love the business, Jay Brown, who you know, really did an interesting job of breaking the company up and selling parts. And then one of those parts, Crum & Forster of today, was bought by Prem and the Fairfax guys. And they, you know, kind of develop it to where it is today. And so it's an interesting journey, but you have those pivotal leaders and you can see, you know, what they were thinking and where their heads were at. And so one interesting part of the book, I was talking to one of my guys at our Christmas party, and he was like, oh, I loved page 50. And I was like, I'm sure I love page 52, but I have to go back and look at what it was. And it's kind of a stream of consciousness kind of description of what you would be thinking if you were the Xerox guys, while things were going bad, right? And as I read it, I'm like, I'm not sure where that came from, but you know, I found myself in those situations, and so that probably is being channeled in the book. And so, so yeah, it's an interesting collection of people that kind of get profiled as part of the book.
Absolutely, wonderful. How has the company's commitment to innovation helped it stay ahead of industry trends and maintain its leadership position in P&C, accident health, and specialty insurance?
Well, that's it's interesting because that, you know, because Crum was there 200 years, you know, the innovations are hilarious, right? The telephone, the, you know, calculator, you know, they had a Burroughs adding machine, which I had to look up what that was, and it was pretty medieval, but they were one of the first ones to use it. You know, so you kind of rode different innovations product wise, right? One of the first work comp writers, one of the first E&S carriers, one of the first in professional liability. So all of these kind of product trends. And then when you look at some of the more, you know, interesting ones specific to insurance, Forster, did one of the first sale leasebacks, right? They needed money. They had this building in New York. They're like, sell it and lease it back. And so kind of an innovation in the financial thing, financial world. And then Jay Brown started the first runoff company, right? So some of these things that were like necessities, being the mother of invention. And then I think for a lot of the other stuff, you know, they have these pictures that I think I included a couple of the room of computers, like one of the first big metal machines from IBM, and how that all evolved. And so I think other than the sale leaseback and the runoff company, I think, you know, we weren't inventing the future, but they were looking at what the future was and trying to put it to use to further the business, which again is another through line to today, I think, you know, that we try to do the same thing. But you know, creative people in situations where they need to get innovative, I think there were plenty of examples of that through time.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
Interesting, very interesting. Mark, in what ways has the company cultivated a positive work environment, and how has its culture contributed to the company's success and its status as a great place to work?
That's a great story, right? So I do take people through kind of the highs and lows, the ups and downs, but it has a happy ending. So if you like books with happy endings, it has a happy ending. And part of that was when I got to Crum, I had been around for a long time. You know, I was sitting here in the office, and I was thinking, you know, really, why do people work at companies? Why do people show up? And then why do great companies attract great people? And how do you build that culture? And Fairfax is very culture oriented. You know, Prem's got a very kind of principles based leadership idea. And so we really reverse engineered, you know, it's like, okay, I'm here. Other people are here. I've worked places. How do we make Crum a great place to work? And how do you go about that? And I think a lot of that, you know, as it turned out with COVID, wasn't a big deal later, but like the physical space, the, you know, when you have an event, you know, the thought you put into it. During COVID, actually, one of my more interesting things I started doing, which probably led to this book in a weird way, was I started writing notes to people on Fridays, right? If you think about that first week of COVID, people were freaking out. And I was like, I think I better check in with people. And I established this Friday note concept. And tomorrow, I think I put out number 253. And it went from COVID kind of news to being more things that I just find interesting. And maybe snippets of the book showed up in those over the years. But so communication, how we communicate. And then frankly, when COVID hit, you know, we thought about it and kind of embraced. We already had a pretty, people were spread all over the place. You know, we said, okay, we've got this communication concept going. This hybrid thing seems to be working. Let's embrace it. But then let's think about where do we fill in those gaps, right? And I think our culture now has a very event-driven, you know, focused, intense events. And then people, you know, go back to wherever they like to work, and it's worked out fantastically. But really, like, if we ask people now, you know, would you recommend Crum's a great place to work? We're at 95% yes, which is good. And so I feel like it's working. And when I'm out with people and at events, and even if we're in, you know, some of our international operations, you feel the sense that the people like being here and enjoy it. And I think that's good for everyone. It's good for business. It's good for our customers. Like, they can feel, I think, that people like being there. But if you look at the history, you know, there were points when Crum absolutely had that. and then there are points that, you know, weren't. And you realize that the, you know, the part of that culture is the results, right? If you're growing, you're making money, it's fun. If you're shrinking and doing cleanup duty, it's not fun. And so the responsibility to, you know, hopefully, where possible, avoid getting into those situations is heavy if you kind of understand how that all works, right?
Absolutely. Well, in your book, you discuss some of the challenging markets that Crum & Forster faced throughout its history. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how the company navigated those difficulties to maintain its success?
Yeah, so I hinted a little bit, but the kind of pivotal moment, if you think about it, was, you know, in the early 80s, the industry was, you know, triple bankrupt, right? If you just marked everything to market on the asset side, it was bankrupt. And then, you know, the surplus of the industry was maybe $75 billion. And if you think about, you know, the $200 billion in counting of asbestos and environmental, and then you throw in uncollectible reinsurance and all that stuff, it was a bad time to have a balance sheet. And so it happened to be about when Crum, you know, got sold to Xerox. And so Xerox is an interesting story in that Xerox had discovered everything that goes into the modern, you know, PC. And instead of capitalizing on that, they buy, you know, Crum & Forster. But the nice thing is Xerox, as a parent, had some financial wherewithal to kind of help Crum work through it. And while, you know, cash flow underwriting is kind of a dirty word, with underwriters, as it should be, you know, in a weird way, Xerox kind of does this cash flow underwriting thing, you know, so that they get out and it's probably all in, you know, a zero return on their money. They could have put their money in bonds and made, you know, 10% a year, but, you know, that notwithstanding, They kind of manage their way through it, and yet because they were kind of on their back foot in the 80s, you know, if I compare them with, say, AIG, right, for example, came into the 80s with kind of clean powder, you know, they end up spending the next 10 years building this giant, you know, operation. You know, Crum's back there trying to clean up the prior two decades, right? So it goes back to that, the people that really, whether by, you know, planning or fortuitous timing, timed and surfed those markets, right? You think about the other one, we were still cleaning up when 9/11 kind of created the next hard market, right? And so a lot of people use that hard market to dig out of prior year holes if they were kind of ready for it. Some new companies formed that had, you know, fresh capital and they could kind of go from there. You know, we were still cleaning up from the prior years. And so it goes to that, you know, all the models, everything, you know, people use now haven't totally solved for the market cycle. And so being able to read the cycle and kind of surf the cycle, I think, is enormously important. And it's the, but it's hard, right? Because you really, it requires discipline to say, you know, well, I like growing. Growing's fun and we'll make money eventually. We'll grow our way out of it, which is not the thing to say in a super soft market. And yet people say it all the time. And when you see the people who have the discipline and they kind of say, okay, we're gonna shrink this of our own volition, that's a tough call from a management standpoint. And I think that's probably more the exception than the rule. And so it's super interesting to kind of see how that all plays out, right?
Mark, what are some of the most important lessons learned throughout the company's history that current and future industry leaders, as well as aspiring entrepreneurs, can apply to their own companies?
I think the big one, if I had to say, you know, kind of the lesson or the message for the future really is that this is a business that really pays dividends to understanding the fundamentals of the business, right? And you know, for young people getting into the business, right? It's almost like, you know, a puzzle you're trying to piece together, or a, you know, a maze you're trying to navigate. And that should be exciting, right? It even at my advanced age here, like, I still learn stuff, right? Part of researching this book was to kind of keep learning. And I think that, you know, that if you really are going to do this and do it kind of responsibly, that you really should know and understand. And even if you know and understand everything, you can still find yourself sideways, but you've done everything you can to kind of get ahead of that. And I think that part is, you know, comes through the message, and that there are people that clearly are deep, knowledgeable students of this business and are really, you know, making the right moves. And then other people who are kind of like, I got a part right. And part right is dangerous in this business, right? And so I think that, you know, recognizing the market cycles, the unknowability, you know, kind of element. But a lot of it, again, I think goes to, and this is, again, a very Fairfax concept, but, you know, kind of long-term thinking, right? If you're going in for a quick hit, there are probably better ways to do it. If you're in for kind of the long term, it's a great business. And I think that, you know, just appreciating that is kind of important if you're getting into it.
When you look throughout the course of your career, what changes and emerging opportunities have you seen in the industry?
I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and right, if you really want to explode somebody's head who's started in the last few years, you talk about the state of paper in the 80s or whatever, and you're like, well, you had the stack of paper, and then people had these calculators, and if they were lucky, they had a big calculator, and they had a little spool of paper, and you'd see it, and they're like, hold on, like, how is it even possible? I can't imagine. And to see, you know, today we're using like AI and practical applications, that change is unbelievable, right? Because you had people that paper, I can't do this underwriting without my paper. And now that's just, you know, unfathomable, right? And so to see, the nice thing about, you know, doing this for a long time, right, is you could see back into the past, because right, people I started working with had started working probably in the, you know, 50s and 60s, and they were, you know, kind of moving along, and then you see it all change. And so some of that just operationally, you know, I'm an actuary, right? And so some of the things that we were like, oh, this is like super duper data, you know, whatever. And now you have kids coming out of school with data science degrees that are like, wow, that's pretty amazing. So I think that part of it is amazing. I think, but like product wise, I think, you know, if you look at you know, one of my examples of late that I didn't put in the book, but, you know, cyber insurance, you know, you look at that and the industry really did a good job of meeting a demand. And with a lot of uncertainty, right? And so if you look at cyber, it's probably one of the most dynamic claim situations that anyone's ever seen in a short period, right? So the claims went from being third party to first party to some combination platter over a very short period of time. And the industry was shifting, you know, what the product is and how it worked and the coverage. And it's still shifting. There's still a lot of uncertainty on it. But I think when you look at insurance as kind of a social good and doing something for business and society in total, and you look at cyber, you know, the industry absorbed a huge amount of risk, did it without, you know, perfect knowledge. And frankly, some of the underwriting that came along over the last few years impacted how the customers are performing their own cyber security, you know, so it helped them with their, you know, frequency, you know, it took the volatility out. And so it really worked the way it should, but it all kind of happened, you know, in the last, whatever, 7 or 8 years, I think. And so when you see that, you're like, okay, this is an industry that's dynamic, that we're thinking about things, and you know, again, like maybe we don't invent the future, but we're kind of right there, ready to use it.
Absolutely. So, Mark, what do you hope readers will take away from your book?
I think it depends, right? Like, I think for salty veterans such as myself, right? You get kind of a fun walk down memory lane, right? And, I remember that, or I forgot that. But really it was more written for the next generation, right? And so my goal was really to give people a sense of like you're kind of right there in some of these sections, right? And you should appreciate that I do it in kind of a light way, but, you know, those are really tough situations to be in, and you do not want to find yourself in those situations. And so really to extract, okay, well, how did they end up that way? And, you know, what would I do in that situation? And to really kind of, you know, dig in. And so I would say, you know, if you're an actuary, you should absolutely read this book. It's not that flattering for actuaries, again, just because. If you're, an underwriter, you should read this book. I think if you're a claim professional, you should read this book. But certainly if you're an aspiring leader, I think you should read this book. And then I think, you know, maybe one generation beyond that, you know, a lot of people that are in school thinking about jobs are like, insurance is boring. I think when you read this book, insurance is not boring, right? There is a lot going on, and it challenges you in a way that that if you're thinking about it right, you should want to be challenged in your career, right? And so I think for that generation, so if the people listening to this know someone who's thinking about a career in insurance, this would be a good book to give them the sense that this is not an easy business, but it pays dividends, and you have a lifelong kind of learning that you can, apply yourself to kind of mastering this insurance topic, and that it'll be exciting and pay dividends. And so giving a little bit of that sense that it's not boring. It's got a lot going on, and it can be fascinating, and the people in the business are kind of interesting, as well. And so really that, you know, it's an appreciation of the business we're in, and if people take that away and maybe research, some of the aspects on their own, you know, that would be cool.
Absolutely. Mark, this has been wonderful. It's such a fascinating book, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Mark Ady, CEO of Crum & Forster and author of the book, The Once and Future CNF. For AM Best TV, I'm Lori Chortis.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.